Let us tonight look at this book, the prophecy of Habakkuk. And the summary we could give of it simply would be, there's a man here with a problem. Who is this man, Habakkuk? Well, the prophets, we've heard them, we've looked at some of them, but the one thing we can see in them is that they were spokesmen for God. The Lord gave them a message and they took that message and declared it authoritatively to God's people. But that was not the only way of God taking his message and his challenge to his people, even to bring correction to them. Because we find in the book of Habakkuk, there is not one record, there is not one instance where he addresses the people. He doesn't speak to them at all. There's no direct message of judgment. There's no direct calling to repentance. There is no address, no word spoken from Habakkuk to the people of Judah. What we have instead is Habakkuk struggling to understand God's purposes for his people. We have God and Habakkuk in a conversation in several different places where Habakkuk pours out his soul to God on the basis of what God has shown to him. And the problem that he had, instead of going away, only gets deeper and thicker. And out of that conversation that they have, and out of the way in which Habakkuk responds and reacts, there is there a lesson for God's people. There is there something that they must pay heed to and learn. So first of all, I want us to think of the problem that this man has. We're going to read portions of it. So let's read the first chapter and verses 1 through 4. Habakkuk chapter 1 and the first 4 verses. The burden which Habakkuk the prophet did see. The burden. We're already introduced there to the problem this man had. O Lord, how long shall I cry, and thou wilt not hear? Even cry out unto thee of violence, and thou wilt not save. Why dost thou show me iniquity and cause me to behold grievance? For spoiling and violence are before me, and there are that rise up strife and contention. Therefore the law is slacked, and judgment doth never go forth. For the wicked doth compass about the righteous, therefore wrong judgment proceedeth. Habakkuk is looking out on his society, and what he sees in his society as what we see today causes him to be greatly troubled. Society then and now is on a downward spiral. There is no respect for individuals, the weak, and those who are ill-fortuned. There is no respect for justice and judgment. The law is slack. Judgment doesn't go forth. Wrong judgments proceed. There is no respect nor regard for anything concerning God or of his covenant or of his way and will. People in these days and in our day seem to be getting away with anything. And Habakkuk saw it. He surveyed it, he looked at it, and it entered into his bones. Because we're told that he was concerned. And out of that concern, he prayed. O Lord, how long shall I cry? And it wasn't just one prayer. One of, obvious from these words, he was often intensely in prayer for the society of which he was a part and for what he saw in that society. And when he looked out on society, he recognized, because of the scale of the problem that he saw, that it needed God to act and to intervene. So the first dimension to his problem was the people round about him in society. But that problem which he had was only intensified because that intervention, which he knew was the only thing that would cure and save that society, that intervention was not coming. There was nothing, as far as he saw, of movement on the part of God, despite the provocation of society rising up before him. How long, he says, how long shall I cry? And that made his problem worse. A problem we can identify with when we pray, and the Lord does not immediately answer our prayers. That we feel the same, in that we feel the same as Habakkuk felt here. But just the same way as Habakkuk did not give up, so we follow that same path if our experiences mirror his. Habakkuk did not give up. He did not give up because of the apparent to him inactivity, the immediate inactivity of God. He saw God as God who was and is in control of society. He saw God who is and was the God of the covenant with and to his people. And therefore he was baffled. How can God be silent when there is that immorality rampant in society? How can God be silent when it is his own people who are behaving in this way that is the burden of Habakkuk's prayers? But not only that, when the prayers of the prophet himself meet with a deafening silence, that only makes things worse for him. But he doesn't give up. He doesn't go away. We are to be persistent in prayer. Our Lord gives us that illustration and that example and that teaching. We are to be insistent, persevering, persistent in prayer. Habakkuk then saw the problem, prayed about it, was met with silence. But then, after some time, the silence was broken, and God answered. God answered and spoke to him. But when God spoke to Habakkuk, it was in a totally unexpected way. He said things and he showed to Habakkuk things that Habakkuk just didn't want to hear, didn't want to know. And that made his problem yet again so much the worse. Let's read verse 5 through to 11. Behold, ye among the heathen, and regard and wonder marvelously. For I will work a work in your days which ye will not believe, though it be told you. For lo, I raise up the Chaldeans, that is the Babylonians, that bitter and hasty nation, which shall march through the breadth of the land to possess the dwelling places that are not theirs. They are terrible and dreadful. Their judgment and their dignity shall proceed of themselves. Their horses also are swifter than leopards and are more fierce than the evening wolves. And their horsemen shall spread themselves and their horses shall come from far. They shall fly as the eagle that hasteth to eat. They shall come all for violence. Their faces shall sup up as the east wind, and they shall gather the captivity as the sand. And they shall scoff at the kings, and the princes shall be a scorn unto them. They shall deride every stronghold, for they shall heap dust and take it. Then shall his mind change, and he shall pass over, and offend, imputing this as power unto his God. Perhaps when we've been in something similar to where Habakkuk was and Habakkuk was feeling, perhaps when we've got a big, deep, serious problem, we've gone through the same kind of experiences as Habakkuk has gone through. We've persisted in prayer. Perhaps, just like him, we have our own answers to our own prayers. Lord, this is what I'm feeling. This is what I'm experiencing. This is what I'm going through. And Lord, this is the way I expect I can see an answer coming. That's sometimes the mindset of ourselves. Lord, this is the problem of society. I'm seeing it round about me in the days and life of Judah. Lord, come and correct your people. Purify your people. Revive your work in these days. But God comes and flies in the face of all that Habakkuk expected. God flies in the face of all that we might conceive of and possibly anticipate. What does he say to Habakkuk? He says, I'm going to do something marvelous and wonderful amongst you. And you're not going to believe it, even although I tell it to you straight. I'm going to raise up the Babylonians. And that's what happened. In the year 586, they captured the city of Jerusalem. As a consequence of capturing the city, we read of several waves of the nation that were taken into exile. And that's what God did amongst his people. And here he is telling Habakkuk of what he's going to do. The thing that he least expected. It perhaps even goes so far as to say it never even entered his thinking in a range of options of answers to his prayer. It just simply didn't feature on his radar. It didn't even come over the horizon before him. Least expected. And that very problem, that very possibility brought further intensification of the problem to Habakkuk. There's one place written where John Newton was very concerned to deepen his own spiritual life. And in asking the Lord to do so, he did as Habakkuk had, and as we often do, he had his own expectations of the way the Lord would answer that prayer and bring that to him. Something along the lines of perhaps an intense and sustained appreciation of what the Lord had done and great blessings coming upon his souls, on his soul. Perhaps he would be given unusual tokens of the Lord's presence with him. Perhaps something of the very opening of heaven itself and bringing some of that glory into John Newton's experience. Yes, that's the kind of channels that his answers to him were running along. But God did what he least expected. What happened to John Newton? He felt abandoned. He went down in his spiritual life. He felt utterly abandoned, and he had to struggle and he had to wrestle and he had to think through his Christian faith once again. And as he did so, as he came out of that experience, so he was brought to a deeper appreciation of the Lord his God. Much more so than any of the things that he had conceived of or he anticipated as an answer to his prayer. The problem and the way in which the Lord answered it for John Newton. The prayer and the way the Lord answered it for John Newton. The problem and the way the Lord answered it for Habakkuk. the means that he used to bring about the purification of his people. The means the Lord used to purify his church. The means the Lord uses in your life and mine. We could never anticipate. It's least expected. But one conclusion we can come to is it is most effective. The Lord is underneath no obligation to give reason or explanation to us. He does not owe us anything of that. He is the Lord, and he is the one who dictates, directs the lives of individuals and the lives of nations. And that's what he did with Judah and Habakkuk. And that's what he does, with us. The problem. But then time moved on. Having given that indication to Habakkuk, the reality of its fulfillment came upon the nation, and the Babylonians started to come. We are given indication here of their resources, their army, their hunger and thirsting to mop up and to sweep up nations and peoples before them. The speed of their horses, their desire, their hunger for everything. They come with violence, such like words of description given. But then it happened. It really happened. And we come then to verse 12 to 17. Again, let's read it. Art thou not from everlasting, O Lord my God, mine Holy One? We shall not die. O Lord, thou hast ordained them for judgment. And, O mighty God, thou hast established them for correction. Thou art of purer eyes than to behold in evil, and canst not look on iniquity. Wherefore lookest thou upon them that deal treacherously? And holdest thy tongue when the wicked devoureth the man that is more righteous than he? And makest men as the fish of the sea, as the creeping things that have no ruler over them? They take up all of them with the angle, or that's with the hook. They catch them in their net and gather them in their drag. Therefore they rejoice and are glad. Therefore they sacrifice unto their net and burn incense unto their drag. Because by them their portion is fat and their meat plenteous. Shall they therefore empty their net and not spare continually to slay the nations? Up till this point, perhaps we can say that Habakkuk was mystified. But now he's downright perplexed. To his mind there is an inconsistency now. Thou art of purer eyes than to behold iniquity, and canst not look on iniquity. Wherefore lookest thou upon them that deal treacherously? God is a holy God. And here is God dealing with and using an unholy people. And he's using these unholy people against his own people. That's something that Habakkuk could not get his mind round. That's the problem that he had, going deeper and deeper as the Lord revealed more and more of his plan and intention to him. It was like catching fish. They just didn't stand a chance. They were rounded up in the net. They were caught with the hook. They were landed, and the people who did the fishing rejoiced. And even the Babylonians here, they gave praise to their own instruments and the equipment that brought it all about. The rampant idolatry, giving praise and worship to these things that they made themselves for what they had caught, even the fish, even the nations round about them. The perplexity that Habakkuk was in. We can be in that same kind of a problem. We can be facing something similar, where we have a problem, we take it to the Lord, and the answer the Lord gives us far from giving us enlightenment, only intensifies our problem. But let's remind ourselves that Habakkuk did not give up. We must not allow problems, however complex they might be in our lives, we must not allow them to undermine our faith. What does Habakkuk do here? He retreats to what he is certain of. Yes, Lord, you are the eternal one, the everlasting one. Lord, you are the holy one. Lord, you are the almighty one. Of these things I am sure. And I'm just going to leave the rest as pending until I get further light upon it. Here he is then. A man who's going through perplexity, who's beginning to see things in spiritual terms, and through his experiences, through what he's thinking and what he's been told and shown, like we said at the beginning, there's teaching for the nations. There's a teaching and instruction for the people. Why are they going to be caught like fish? Why are they going to be exposed to this cruelty of the Babylonians? Why are all these things happening to them? One simple answer from Jeremiah 22. And again, Jeremiah and Habakkuk were alive at the same time. Jeremiah 22 and at verse 8 we read, "And many nations shall pass by this city," that is Jerusalem, "and they shall say every man to his neighbor, for has the Lord done thus to this great city? Then they shall answer, because they have forsaken the covenant of the Lord their God and worshipped other gods and served them." That's the lesson that is being brought through the experience and the problems of Habakkuk, being brought home to be taught to the nation and to the people. For ourselves, we can look either at our own life and our own problems, or we can look on a wider circle at a question and an application and a principle that is timeless, not constricted or limited in any way. But we can so often have the same question: why? So many different areas, like Habakkuk had. Lord, why is society left to go on like this? Lord, why do you not answer the prayers of your people? Lord, why are these things going on round about us? Lord, why is the church being persecuted and suffering? Why is there complacency? Why are these things? Keep on asking the question why, with problems we've got, just like Habakkuk had. The problem then, chapter 1. So what do we do as an answer? What do we find as an answer going into chapter 2? We find here, verses 1 to 3. "I will stand upon my watch and set me upon the tower, and will watch to see what he will say unto me, and what I shall answer when I am reproved. And the Lord answered me and said, write the vision and make it plain upon tablets, that he may run that readeth it. For the vision is yet for an appointed time, but at the end it shall speak and not lie. Though it tarry, wait for it, because it will surely come, it will not tarry. Behold, a soul which is lifted up is not upright in him, but the just shall live by his faith." Now, can you imagine the tension and the pressure and the turmoil that's going on inside Habakkuk? It's made more intense because the Babylonian army is now approaching. He's moved on from being told by God. He's now seen it coming into his nation. Therefore, he's under great pressure. And one of the hardest things to do is to wait, especially under pressure when circumstances demand some kind of a response. But that's what Habakkuk has resolved to do. He's adopting the attitude of the guard upon the watchtower. And he's there with a vigilance of the guard who watches for the slightest approach of danger, the slightest movement of the enemy. So that is the attitude of Habakkuk. He's watching for the slightest indication of a solution to his problem that might come from the Lord graciously. He shuts out anything that would distract him. And when it does come, it comes in a very special, at least it comes, and he's told in a very special and specific way to write it down. He's told to do it so that, we're told, so that he that runs may read. That's a phrase that could mean several different things. Perhaps there's an element from all of them that applies, but to run and read, it might mean, for example, that whatever it's written on should be light enough to be carried by somebody who's running, and therefore the message should be spread through the whole nation. But perhaps it's something else. Not only that, but perhaps the message should be large enough and clear enough on the parchment or the slab, whatever it is written on, large and clear enough so that there is no confusion over what is written. In other words, if somebody comes running past it, they're able to read it, understand it, and see it, even although there is that brief, only brief exposure to it. No doubt over what the Lord is saying. The answer is coming. It's not false. It's not a lie. It may be delayed, but it will come. The Lord will do what the Lord has said. And he will do it precisely and exactly. There's a little phrase, it applies to something totally different, but I just want to quote the phrase in Exodus chapter 12 and verses 40 and 41. Well, verse 40. And it came to pass at the end of the 430 years. Get this time scale. It came to pass at the end of the 430 years, even the selfsame day, it came to pass that all the hosts of the Lord went out from the land of Egypt. That's the timing of the Lord. Absolutely precise and exact. Even over the scale of 430 years, it happened exactly on the day appointed. The answer is coming. And now in verse 4 we have this phrase, the just shall live by his faith. And the contrast that has been set up here for us is between those who rely upon their own resources and such like, or the Christian like Habakkuk, to trust and rely upon his God. Rely upon what God has said. Rely upon what God will do to solve these deepest problems in his life. The just shall live by his faith. We've got problems in our lives and we do not go to other counselors for a solution for it and to it. But instead we turn to our God and we look to him for an answer to these problems which perplex us. The Lord then is telling Habakkuk, I'm going to use Babylon. And that surprises Habakkuk. But then, in this second chapter, Habakkuk is then told and shown, yes, I'm going to use the Babylonians. But they themselves are going to be judged by God. Things are not out of his control. They will be taken to task later on for their behavior. And the Babylonians were immoral and cruel. We've read and touched on it in the first chapter and their behavior that is painted in briefly there. Remember the study we had in Nahum and the way in which there was there the fall of Nineveh. The prophecy of Isaiah chapter 10. The cruelty and the barbarity of the nation against God's people, and the Lord was going to take them to task for that barbarity, and they themselves going to fall, and Nineveh pronounced the fall of Nineveh. Nahum, rather, pronounced the fall of Nineveh. Well, a similar kind of argument is now advanced by Habakkuk, by the Lord, to courage Habakkuk. These Babylonians that are coming, what about them? Let's read verse chapter 2 then. And here we have five woes. Verse 6. Shall not all these take up a parable against him and a taunting proverb against him and say? These are the five woes now. Woes that are pronounced against Babylon. Woe to him that increaseth that which is not his. How long? And to him that ladeth himself with thick clay. Shall they not rise up suddenly? That shall bite thee and awake, that shall vex thee, and thou shalt be for booty unto them. Because thou hast spoilt many nations, all the remnant of the people shall spoil thee. Because of men's blood and for the violence of the land and of the city and of all that dwell therein. The first thing that he has taken them to task for, verses 6 through 8, is the plundering. They've spoilt nations. Remnant. Blood of man. Because of men's blood, and for the violence of the land, and of all that dwell therein. He goes on, the second woe. Woe to him that covereth an evil covetousness to his house, that he may set his nest on high, that he may be delivered from the power of evil. There was consulted shame to thy house by cutting off many people, and hast sinned against thy soul. For the stone shall cry out of the wall, and the beam out of the timber shall answer it. Those people who have used force, evil schemes for their own ends. Verse 12. Woe to him that buildeth a town with blood, and establish a city by iniquity. Behold, is it not of the Lord of hosts that the people shall labour in the very fire, and the people shall weary themselves for very vanity? For the earth shall be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. The immoral foundations of an empire and of a society, built upon blood, established upon iniquity. How do you think that kind of a society, empire and nation is ever going to last? They don't have the right foundation, therefore woe is put against them. Verse 15. Woe to him that giveth his neighbour drink, that putteth thy bottle to him, and makest him drunken also, that thou mayest look on their nakedness. Thou art filled with shame for glory. Drink thou also, and let thy foreskin be uncovered. The cup of the Lord's right hand shall be turned unto thee, and shameful spewing shall be on thy glory. For the violence of Lebanon shall cover thee, and the spoil of beasts which made them afraid because of man's blood, and for the violence of the land and of the city and of all that dwell therein. What profiteth the graven image that the maker thereof hath graven it? The molten image and the teacher of lies that the maker of his work trusteth thereon to make dumb idols. Here we have the violation, the exploitation of those who are weak in society. Go on, give him a drink. Let's see what we can get out of him. Give him a drink and we can take advantage of him, of her, of them. Woe to them that have that kind of approach in society. The exploitation of the vulnerable. And the Lord is saying, the cup of the Lord's right hand, verse 16, notice what it says, the cup of the Lord's right hand shall be turned unto thee. We have a saying today, what goes around comes around. They're going to be paid in their own coinage. And this is the vision that the Lord is giving and sharing with Habakkuk. Yes, this nation that he's going to use, but the nation that he's also going to judge. Verse 19, woe unto him that saith to the wood, awake, to the dumb stone, arise, it shall teach. Behold, it is laid over with gold and silver, and there is no breath at all in the midst of it. But the Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth keep silence before him. Idolatry. Blatant and obvious. A nation then, Babylon. Outwardly, it looked robust, enduring, invincible. But a nation that was built on a wrong foundation. A nation that had the rules of its society on immoral means. A nation that was guilty of so much sin that rose up as a stench before God. The seeds of destruction were already planted within that nation because of her behavior. And therefore the sovereign Lord is going to enter into judgment against Babylon. By faith, Habakkuk is shown the vision. He takes comfort from it. And he is silent. Patiently, God has dealt with him. Some of the words that Habakkuk said, especially in the first chapter, they were hard words to God. But the Lord took him through the problem, revealed to him the use that he was going to put Babylon to, but also showed the way in which Babylon itself later on was going to be taken to account and to task. She's guilty. She's going to be judged. But only after Babylon has been used by the Lord to correct his people. The Lord can deal with us in the same way, with patience, teaching us and showing us. We need to keep our faith active, sensitive. Our vision fixed upon the Lord. To trust in his character and his promises. However incongruous things might seem to us, however inconsistent they might be with what the Lord is saying or promising, we are told here, the just shall live by his faith. We've got to have in our lives this structuring principle in our life and in our outlook. Although the wicked may flourish, the green bay tree. Although the wicked might flourish just like that, they don't last, Psalm 37. There is a woe against Babylon here. But it's a message that's carried to all societies. People who make their way in life by sharp practice. What is it that is before them? What is it that waits for them? A final meeting with God, for which they are not ready, and from which they will emerge, bitterly regretting the many past opportunities and privileges they had. Those that adopt substitutes and alternatives for God by way of idolatry, all of these substitutes will be shown up to be futile, and they will be taken to task by God for such offence to him. These are the visions, these are the lessons, these are the things that Habakkuk was shown. And so therefore we come to chapter 3. We've already read it, the important conclusion of it all. The whole book and the chapter is in these last few verses. They are possibly the thing about Habakkuk that we know or recognize most quickly. Here is Habakkuk reduced to silence. He realizes that there is wrong amongst the nation. He acknowledges that the Lord in sovereignty is going to correct his people using the Babylonians to do so. and he fears the Lord. I have heard thy speech. Yes, Lord, I've listened to what you've said. And I was afraid. I was afraid. I am afraid, Lord. I stand in awe of what you are doing. You're doing it in wisdom, Lord. And you're doing it for the good of your people. But Lord, I stand in awe of it. And then he makes this prayer. O Lord, revive thy work in the midst of the years. In the midst of the years, make known. In wrath, remember mercy. That phrase that's twice repeated. In the midst of the years. Lord, do it quickly. Do it now. And when you do it, Lord, mix mercy with wrath. Mix mercy with your judgment of your people, that deep felt love and compassion that the Lord has towards his own. And then he goes on from there to the end of the chapter in two great images that he shares with us. The thought of the mercy of the Lord turns Habakkuk to reflect on the ways the Lord has dealt with his people in the past. He recalls the majesty and the grandeur of the Lord. There are two images he gives us here. Verses 3 through 7. It's perhaps difficult for us to recognize it as it is written there for us, but what he's giving us here is the Lord speaking, coming to Sinai. He's here showing to us the Lord, the one who reveals himself and his message to his people. That's the image that he gives first of all. God has spoken. He's done it, chapters 1 and 2 to Habakkuk. The image that he's got here at the beginning of that prayer. But not only is God the one who has spoken, but also in verses 8 through 15, we have God as the image of the warrior. Was the Lord displeased against the rivers? Was thine anger against the rivers? Was thy wrath against the sea that thou didst ride upon them? There we have the Lord as the warrior. The note has changed. He's coming to defend his people. He's coming to defend his people against Babylon, drawing them back to himself. He will not abandon them. He does not abandon them. The ultimate victory is his and his people. And then we come to this conclusion, these last few verses. Habakkuk has been on a tremendous personal spiritual voyage of discovery. He started with a problem, arose as he looked out on his society and the way the people lived. The Lord told him what he was going to do about that problem and the surprising strands to it that we've discovered for ourselves. And now that he's come full circle, Habakkuk tells us his attitude in it all and his attitude to it all. Things are going to come soon upon the people from Babylon's hand. And the land is going to be bleak. But yet Habakkuk boasts in his God. When the Lord spoke, he tells us, my belly trembled. I was scared stiff. My knees knocked. Strength went out of my feet. But he's waiting for the day of the Lord, when the calamity will come upon the oppressors. Oh yes, there might be the day when the fig tree shall not blossom. Neither shall fruit be found in the vines. The labor of the olive shall fail and the fields shall yield no meat. The flock shall be cut off from the fold and there shall be no herd in the stalls. Yes, that's what's going to happen when the Babylonians are going to come. You've told me, Lord, and you've shown me, Lord. Disaster is going to come and it's already lapping on their shores with a threat to the city. But there's no place anymore for doubts and fears or questions. He tells us in verse 18 his boast. I will rejoice in the Lord. I will joy in the God of my salvation. The Lord God is my strength, and he will make my feet like hinds' feet. All of these questions and fears that we saw him having at the beginning of this chapter, they've all been replaced with trust and reliance upon the Lord, even in these times of extreme difficulty. Let me close with words from Paul himself. Philippians chapter 4 and verses 12 and 13. I know both how to be abased and I know how to abound. Every way and in all things I am instructed both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. I can do all things through Christ who strengtheneth me. Now that he's got the message, now that he's shown the way things are going to be, yes, barrenness in the vine, in the orchard, in the byre. But that doesn't upset him as it did in the past, because his strength, his boast, is in his God.